I really believe that Kim Jong-un wants to do something that is going to be great for his people.
Trump and Abe meet ahead of next week's summit with North Korea. It's Friday, June 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We invite you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, not everyone is happy with the summit, but Singapore is ready. Fresh data problems for Facebook reach to China. Some Vietnamese face U.S. deportation, polio in Pakistan, and piling plastic in Asia. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says the outcome of a historic high-stakes summit with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un next week will depend more on attitude and willingness than preparedness. Sitting beside Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe ahead of their meeting at the White House on Thursday, Trump said he's prepared for the Singapore summit, which he described as a much more than a photo op.
I am totally prepared to walk. It could happen. Maybe it won't be necessary. I hope it won't be necessary to walk, because I really believe that Kim Jong-un wants to do something that is going to be great for his people and also great for his family and great for himself.
Trump said of North Korea, they have to denuke. We cannot take sanctions off.
Maximum pressure is absolutely in effect. We don't use the term anymore because we're going into a friendly negotiation. Perhaps after that negotiation, I will be using it again. You'll know how well we do in the negotiation. If you hear me saying we're going to use maximum pressure, you'll know the negotiation did not do well, frankly. There's no reason to say it. We, in the meantime, haven't removed any sanctions. We have a list of over 300 massive, in some cases, sanctions to put on North Korea, and I've decided to hold that until we can make a deal, because I really believe there's a potential to make a deal, and I just don't think it's nice going in under those circumstances.
Abe visited to consult with Trump about his country's concerns regarding the summit. Abe says his government wants to see progress on limiting North Korea's nuclear program and ballistic missile work, and he wants Trump to discuss with Kim the issue of Japanese nationals who were kidnapped by North Korea during the 1970s and 1980s. Standing alongside Trump in the White House Rose Garden, Abe spoke via a translator with the media.
What will be conducive to solve the abduction issue? Of course, I will have to think about the summit meeting for Japan, North Korea summit meeting. If we are to have the summit meeting, the nuclear, the missile, and what is more important, the abduction issue, the solution to all these issues must be sought. And I hope that we will be able to realize a summit meeting which would lead to solution of the problems.
Other powers in the region have had more of a voice in the upcoming Trump-Kim summit in Singapore. The leaders of China and South Korea have met with Kim twice, in addition to consultations with the Trump administration. Abe has signaled he's open to talks with Kim, but only if doing so would help resolve the abduction issue. Ahead of the Trump-Kim summit in Singapore, the leaders of China and South Korea have met with Kim twice. Abe has signaled he's open to such talks, but none have yet taken place. We'll have more on the upcoming summit in just a moment on VOA Asia. These are among some of the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. South Korean conservative leader pessimistic about U.S.-North Korea summit. Before Trump-Kim summit, Japan's prime minister visits the White House. Taiwan drills simulate repelling invading force. Hong Kong gay rights suffer setbacks. POWs, buried silver, the history of the Trump-Kim summit venue. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook. Also, stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The public image of North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, appears to have softened in the media following the historic summit last month with South Korea's leader and his apparent willingness to meet next week with U.S. President Donald Trump. But some in South Korea are not buying Kim Jong-un's shift from hardline dictator to peace-loving diplomat. Anti-North Korea protesters are warning the world not to be fooled by the new look for the North Korean dictator. They're holding loud rallies in Seoul just days before the historic summit between North Korea and the United States. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's public image has softened of late, but not in the eyes of these protesters in Seoul.
Kim Jong-un is a demon that threatens all mankind.
Former South Korean soldier-turned-protester Kim Sang-jin says that a misinformation campaign shows North Korea's Kim through an unduly kind lens. He blames the media and the government.
Think what kind of person Kim Jong-un is. He shot and killed his uncle with an AA gun, assassinated his half-brother by poisoning him, and executed his men. He's a scary person. Despite all this, the South Korean press is fooling its citizens.
The leaders of North and South Korea held a historic summit at the Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ, last month. South Korean President Moon Jae-in told the North Korean leader that his popularity in the South was on the rise. A recent poll by a local television channel showed 78% of South Koreans now view Kim Jong-un as trustworthy. But protester Kim accuses the seat of government called the Blue House of whitewashing the dictator's image.
The Blue House led and fake news beautified Kim Jong-un's image. And this went on to portals and websites. And they say there's an increase of a feeling of friendliness about Kim Jong-un. But I can never agree to this.
The on-again, off-again talks between the United States and North Korea are scheduled for June 12th in Singapore. But these protesters don't expect a tiger to change his stripes overnight. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Thousands of journalists are set to descend on the tiny city-state of Singapore over the next week as preparations continue for the summit between U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. VOA's Bill Gallo is in Singapore and has more on why the island off the coast of Malaysia is a logical choice for hosting the event.
Singapore is a tiny city-state with 5 million people, a lot of money, and no shortage of beautiful spaces.
Singapore may be cosmopolitan, but it's not really opulent here. In fact, it has all the spontaneity of a pristine shopping mall, which makes it sort of an unusual setting for a reality TV show-worthy summit between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un.
We'll see what happens. It could even be the 12th. We're talking to them now.
The meeting almost didn't happen. Last month, Trump briefly canceled the summit before saying it was back on. That's made preparations on this end pretty challenging. Amid all the summit drama, one factor that's provided some predictability is Singapore's politics.
Public protests are rare here in Singapore. In fact, the government bans unauthorized demonstrations, which could be a key factor for two world leaders who provoke strong feelings.
Singapore is also safe because it's seen as neutral territory. It has diplomatic and, until recently, strong economic ties with both the United States and North Korea.
Has a lot of experience holding major conferences and gatherings of leaders. Past presidents have come here before. ASEAN has a lot of meetings here, including the recent ASEAN summit. So it was very experienced in hosting this kind of events.
Last week, Singapore hosted dozens of defense officials and other dignitaries for the annual Shangri-La Dialogue. All the attention, good for the local economy, but you won't find street vendors selling Trump Kim t-shirts in this tightly regulated city. Instead, cocktails. Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un themed cocktails.
This is Trump. Trump is a bourbon-based cocktail. Bourbon being the most common ones, the common liquor you find in states. And this one is the Kim, which is a soju-based drink.
This bar in the city's business district, waiting to do big business once the hordes of international journalists arrive. Singapore, proving that it may be one of the world's smallest countries, but it knows how to handle the spotlight. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Singapore.
Happening in Asia, the United States appears to be easing public pressure on Pakistan in a bid to encourage the country to help promote peace and reconciliation with the Taliban to bring an end to the war in Afghanistan. The optimism stems from a rare telephone call Wednesday by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo with Pakistan's Army Chief. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you've reached the end of the week with us on VOA Asia. Thanks for listening. The social media giant Facebook has become embroiled in fresh controversy after revelations it allowed Chinese smartphone makers, among others, access to user data. Founder and CEO Mark Zuckerberg was grilled by U.S. lawmakers in April following the disclosure that Facebook failed to protect the privacy of some 87 million users from the London-based political data firm Cambridge Analytica. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Ed Markey said Zuckerberg needs to explain why his company shared Americans' private information with questionable Chinese companies. Facebook said the arrangements with dozens of companies, such as smartphone maker Huawei, have been highly visible for years and necessary so buyers of electronic devices have access to Facebook. It insisted it maintained control over the data, and such arrangements are winding down. Cedric Layton, a former Air Force intelligence officer who operates his own crisis management consultancy, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, since everything is migrating to digital platforms, personal data has become the gold of our time.
It's basically the type of data that you have and what you can do with that data that can allow you not only to sell things to people, but potentially to manipulate them either commercially to buy certain products or politically to vote for certain candidates. And so the risk is very great that data that is culled from these social networks is put to use in a way that, first of all, is not intended, but secondly, can actually change people's perceptions that they have of different events, can potentially change the outcome of elections, and it can potentially change the outcome of commercial deals. So there are a lot of different aspects to this that really are necessary to look at from the standpoint of security as well as untoward influence.
Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts tweeted that Zuckerberg needs to return to Congress and testify why Facebook shared Americans' private information with questionable Chinese companies. Our privacy and national security, he said, cannot be the cost of doing business.
Senator Markey is absolutely right about this, because what we're doing here is we have companies like Facebook, Twitter, and others who are using the data that they have in order to gain access to different elements of the marketplace, and they also want to sell that data to commercial providers. What they're not thinking about is the intelligence value that this data has. And the Chinese are absolutely keen on developing the intelligence aspects associated with this data. That's why China has the largest supercomputers in the world right now. And that is something that is used not only for commercial purposes, but also specifically for intelligence purposes, data collection, data collation, all those kinds of things that intelligence agencies need in order to fine-tune their efforts.
An attorney who works on technology privacy issues said that Facebook's sharing of user data with China phone maker Huawei increases the ability of China to launch damaging cyber attacks on the United States.
That's absolutely true. What they can do with this kind of data is actually go into the social media data that they collected and target very specific people. They can target them with phishing campaigns, phishing in the sense of phishing word. And what that means is they can send targeted emails to those individuals. And those individuals, if they think they recognize the sender of that email, they click on the link. And that would be a simple way of attacking them and spreading viruses throughout the system. So this kind of an action is absolutely a gold mine for not only intelligence agencies, but the cyber weapons arms of different countries. And China is at the forefront of the cyber arms race right now.
Cedric Layton said this represents another black eye for Facebook and underscores how naive it is when it comes to the potential intelligence value of its data. Coming up, some Vietnamese immigrants in the United States face uncertainty. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the United States has reached a deal with China to lift crippling sanctions against the giant Chinese ZTE telecommunications company. The U.S. Commerce Secretary says ZTE will pay a $1 billion fine for violating the U.S. ban on trade with North Korea and Iran, and within 30 days replace its entire management and board. Dial it up on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the administration of President Donald Trump has identified thousands of Vietnamese it says are eligible for deportation. While deportation may not be possible under a 2008 agreement between the United States and Vietnam, those under the cloud of deportation face a life of uncertainty. Vu Nguyen of VOA's Vietnamese service reports.
Robert Huynh weeps for his brother, who died shortly after coming to the U.S., for his future, and for his 80-year-old mother.
I'm afraid that I will not be next to her when she's gone.
The son of a black GI, Huynh arrived in the U.S. with his mother and three siblings in 1984 after the Vietnam War. Now 49 and living in Houston, he never imagined he would be deported back to Vietnam, a country that does not welcome the children of U.S. soldiers. But in 2003, Huynh was convicted for dealing drugs and served a three-year sentence. After his release, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, detained him for another 6 months.
Nobody told me that committing crimes could get me deported if I'm not naturalized. No one ever told me that. Anyway, I didn't believe that the U.S. government could deport a child of an American like me.
Huynh believed he was protected under a 2008 deportation agreement that only allows deportation of Vietnamese who came to the U.S. after 1995. Daniel Kriedenbrink is U.S. ambassador to Vietnam.
For people who came to the United States before 1995, it means that the agreement currently does not cover them.
In March, the U.S. began large-scale roundups of Vietnamese refugees, particularly those with criminal convictions. Huynh was detained by ICE in February 2017 and held for more than a year.
I didn't know about the time frame for release. I didn't know if I could stay or if I'd be deported. I just wait in darkness.
Huynh's attorney obtained his release March 7, but warned him that he could be detained again at any time. The Trump administration has labeled Vietnam recalcitrant for its unwillingness to accept deportees. So for now, Huynh and other Vietnamese like him live under a cloud.
My son cannot be deported. He's American. Look at his father's picture. His father is American.
Experts say Huynh is not alone. He's just one of 8,600 Vietnamese ICE considers undesirable aliens eligible for deportation at any moment. Vu Nguyen, VOA News, Houston, Texas.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the United States has sent a number of people home after conducting medical screenings of diplomats and families in Guangzhou, China. This follows mystery symptoms suffered by a U.S. government employee who reported abnormal sensations of sound and pressure and was diagnosed with a mild traumatic brain injury. More on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, only three countries have never stopped transmission of polio: Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Nigeria, largely because conflicts and cultural opposition thwart vaccination efforts. A common perception in Pakistan is that polio vaccination teams face difficulties only in tribal or rural areas. But there are equally big challenges in the country's cities, such as Lahore, the country's second most populous city. More in this report from Salman Khan in Lahore, VOA's Behzad Hamad narrates.
Polio eradication in Pakistan has come a long way since the latest campaign began in 2014. From 306 reported cases then, down to only 8 cases last year and just 2 so far this year. However, making Pakistan a polio-free country is not an easy task. In many parts of Lahore City, vaccination teams face tough challenges, but workers are determined and remain undaunted.
We face a lot of difficulties in Lahore. There are buildings that are shared by multiple families. Some of them don't have any doorbell system. You have to walk up the stairs.
Lahore is a city of over 10 million people. This Afghan refugee dwelling is one of the target areas of this vaccination campaign. To overcome the language barrier, a local resident from the community helps the polio team.
While living in Quetta, we didn't let our children take polio drops. The word was that it harms our children, that polio drops pose a threat. It will make the next generation impotent. We had no knowledge, and we used to take whatever our elders advised us.
National and international organizations say that Pakistan and Afghanistan need to cooperate on a mass scale in order to eradicate the polio virus for good. For Salman Khan in Lahore, Pakistan, this is Behzad Hamdard, VOA News.
Tuesday marked World Environment Day, and India served as this year's host. Highlighting its theme, Beat Plastic Pollution, environmentalists urge everyone, from those in government, industry, and ordinary citizens, to reject so-called single-use plastic items, which are slowly choking the planet's waters and the animals that live in them. VOA's George Pudich has the conveniently packaged details.
The gravity of the situation was brutally illustrated recently in Thailand, where a team of veterinarians lost a 5-day battle to save a pilot whale, which wandered into one of the country's many canals. Its stomach contained 8 kilograms of bags and other pieces of plastic that the poor animal swallowed while swimming in heavily polluted waters.
It comes from Vietnam, China, Cambodia, and yes, from Thailand too. And it comes in many different forms. There's hospital and medical waste. Household items, lighters, and even children's shoes.
Rapidly developing countries in Southeast Asia are now dumping more plastic waste into the ocean than the rest of the world combined, and it's affecting not only the fish and other creatures in the sea, but people too. Experts agree that the fight must be fought on several fronts. One is educating people about the danger of plastic trash.
You actually are creating waste which is going to live far longer than you. So, and even when after 500 years they could photodegrade, but that doesn't mean they disappear. They just become microplastics, which are actually even more harmful.
The plastic bags that killed the pilot whale could be easily replaced with biodegradable products if consumers insisted on them in the marketplace.
When society will demand a jute bag instead or take a jute bag with them when they leave their homes, then automatically the movement of these plastic bags will die its own death. That is why we have said if everyone starts to contribute a little bit, then the environment will get better.
Experts fear that it will take a long time to change things, but they point out that regular volunteer cleanups, such as this one, organized by the Switzerland-based non-profit Trash Hero, can help in preventing the planet from being suffocated by plastic waste. George Pudich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We thank you so much for joining us today. You know, there's so many ways you can hear our full-length program. You'll find it on iTunes and SoundCloud, streaming daily on Facebook, and our website, voanews.com. We're also heard on great radio stations around Asia, like the voice of Chung Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3, at Chung Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We thank everyone who tuned in there today. And, of course, we thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Dave Magnus, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.